Okay, maybe that's a little better. Good Sunday evening, everyone. Okay, hope you had a great afternoon of activities and conversation with people. Just a few announcements this evening, probably open by the singing of hymn 224. After which we'll ask Brother Andrew Johnson to come forward and open with prayer.
O merciful and eternal Heavenly Father, we, a few of your children, come together, thankful indeed for this day, thankful for guiding us all here safely. We thank you for the food, clothing, and shelter that you've provided for us, and now we thank you for this evening, where we might come together in fellowship one with another, and that we might consider our speaker's words. We pray that as we do so, that you will open our hearts and our minds to our speaker's words tonight, that you will help us to take them in, that you will help us to use them to be better servants before you, that we might be responsive to the needs of our fellow brothers and sisters, that we might be responsive to those in the world who seek your truth, and that we might be responsive servants to you as we await your Son's return, a day of which we have just sung. We pray that as we await that day, you might guide us and direct us. We pray for your blessing now, that you might impart that gift to us tonight. We thank you and praise you and ask your blessing on us now in Jesus' name.
And Farrer to deliver a talk on Tarshish.
Good evening, everyone. Have you ever heard a talk before on the subject of Tarshish? I've heard maybe three talks in my life. I'm telling you this so that you understand why I've chosen this topic. I've heard maybe two or three talks in my life on Tarshish, and all of them have assumed that Tarshish is Britain. The last one I heard, the speaker made the comment that when you see the expression ships of Tarshish, that refers to the British Navy. And I went home and read some of the verses about Solomon's Navy, which are called the ships of Tarshish, and I never really thought that Solomon's Navy was the British Navy, if you think that Tarshish is Britain. I thought there's something I need to investigate a little more carefully for myself. The result of my investigation I'll share with you this evening, and without giving away the full story quite yet, my conclusion is that Britain is not Tarshish, and that in fact Tarshish refers to something else. Why do Bible study about Tarshish? Of all the topics in the Bible, why would we pick Tarshish? A couple of reasons here. It's mentioned quite a bit in the Bible, 24 times across 10 different Old Testament books. There are references to prophecy that are yet to be fulfilled. Therefore, that might help us understand some prophecies in the Bible. And as I mentioned before, if you tend to hear talks on Tarshish, they tend to be talks that say that Britain is Tarshish, and there tends to be no explanation given as to why. Off on the side here of the screen, you'll see a Christadelphian website. It's somewhere in Australia. I don't know more about it than that. But some people will connect the dots between Tarshish and Britain, and then that feeds into Brexit and different things. I think it might be worth just having a second look at whether or not that should be something we should be doing. We're going to cover three topics this evening, or three sort of subtopics. The first thing we're going to do is read a bunch of Bible verses on Tarshish. There are 24 verses. We're going to read 21 of them. After we do that, we're going to use some secondary sources from historians and geographers, which also explain the three ships of Tarshish. And then we're going to look at why people have concluded that Britain is Tarshish, and we'll see whether or not that makes some sense here. There's perhaps no right or wrong answer to this sort of topic. It's not a matter of eternal salvation, but it does help us to understand the Bible a little bit better. Now, if you were to go to Strong's Concordance and look up the word Tarshish, it might be pronounced Tarshish. In Canada, we say Tarshish, so I'll say Tarshish for this evening. If you look up the meaning of the word Tarshish, it's up there in the top right corner in the green box. It actually gives three different ways in which Tarshish is used. The first one, it says the region of the stone. So a region would be a geographic area. So Tarshish could refer to a place. And that's why in the second column here, you see Tarshish as a place. And that's because, according to this concordance definition, it can refer to a region. Another possibility for this word Tarshish, it says a place on the Mediterranean, hence the epithet of a merchant vessel. Now, epithet is a word we don't see very often. It means a descriptive phrase. They're saying then that the ships of Tarshish could be a descriptive phrase of a merchant vessel. Whether or not that's true, we'll investigate that further. Therefore, over here on the left, where it says ships of Tarshish, that's another possibility that Tarshish can refer to ships. And the last one, it says up here that Tarshish is also the name of a Persian and an Israelite, and that's in these references here to 1 Chronicles and Esther. We're not going to look at these three references here, just the first one there. Let's begin then. The first reference we're going to examine refer to the ships of Tarshish. We're going to start with the references to ships first. And as we're going through these, what would you think that the ships of Tarshish mean? We can try and tell from the context. We need whatever the ships of Tarshish are. When we look at all the references here to the ships of Tarshish, it has to be consistent, whatever we conclude, right? So let's begin. We're going to look at a few references here in 1 Kings and also 2 Chronicles. This refers to Solomon's fleet. The first reference is 1 Kings 9, verse 26. And it says, King Solomon built a fleet of ships at Ezion-Geber, which is near Elat on the shore of the Red Sea in the land of Edom. On the map over here on the left, this is Ezion-Geber right here. It's at the tip of the Red Sea, one of the arms of the Red Sea. This verse tells us then that King Solomon built ships. This was the port where they were launched from. And we want to think, why would King Solomon build ships here? The kingdom of Israel also has borders on the Mediterranean Sea. So why would Solomon build ships in this port in Ezion-Geber rather than, say, a port like Joppa on the coast of Israel? The Bible doesn't say why he built the ships here instead of here. One thing I should also mention is that this map, it shows the Suez Canal. But in the time of Solomon, there was no Suez Canal. It wasn't built till the 1850s. Therefore, we need to think about why you would have a big fleet of ships that was built in Ezion-Geber as opposed to somewhere on the Israelite coast. Next reference here. This reference actually uses the phrase ships of Tarshish. The references here are all taken from the ESV, unless otherwise stated. This one says that king, who is Solomon, had a fleet of trading ships of Tarshish, manned by the sailors sent by Hiram. Hiram was the king of Tyre. And Tyre, you see here, Tyre was the predominant seaport in the Mediterranean Sea. We're going to talk a little bit more about Tyre in some of the references that we look at later. It was the predominant seaport in the Mediterranean Sea. It was a hub of commercial activity and maritime activity. Whatever these ships were, they required special attention because not everyone could sail them. The Israelites couldn't sail these ships. In fact, they had to get some of these sailors that were up in Tyre to sail these ships. And so there's something special about these ships. Notice also this detail here. It says once every 3 years the ships returned to Ezion-Geber, loaded with, there were five items in the cargo here. There was gold, there was silver, there was ivory, there was apes, and there was peacocks. Where do you think you would find gold, silver, ivory, apes, and peacocks? Somewhere it would have to be far away from the land of Israel. Because if it would take 3 years to make a round trip, if you leave Ezion-Geber, 3 years later you come back, and then you have gold, silver, ivory, apes, and peacocks on the ship, presumably you're going somewhere fairly far afield. Now we'll talk about gold because of this verse down here. Even though this is talking about a successor of Solomon, who is King Jehoshaphat, Jehoshaphat made ships of Tarshish, and they went to go to Ophir for gold. On the next slide, you'll see a map of a probable location of Ophir. It would be somewhere in Africa. It's likely then that these ships here, that the ships of Tarshish were going to somewhere in Africa to load up with gold. What about ivory, apes, and peacocks? Where would you tend to find those types of things? Let's start with ivory. What kind of animals would have ivory?
Elephants.
Elephants? Where do you find elephants? In Africa, and they could also be in India. So it's likely then that these ships went either to Africa or to India for the ivory. How about apes and peacocks? Where do you find those? You can find apes in Africa, and you can find peacocks in both Africa and India. There is apparently a type of peafowl that lives in the Congo area of Africa, at least today. I don't know about back in Solomon's day. Now, we didn't mention silver, though. where do you find silver? Well, we're not going to answer that question quite yet. But as we go through, I want you to think, why would Solomon be sending out ships to load up with silver? And there's another reason why as well. Does anyone remember what the Bible says about silver in the days of Solomon? He tended to use gold to build his temple, all the artifacts in the temple, etc. Anyone remember what 1 Kings 10:21 says about silver? There was so much of it that it wasn't even accounted of. Now Solomon was a very wise king. Why would he want to send these large ships? They had to be large if they're going to be gone for 3 years and come back with all these cargoes. Why would Solomon be sending out ships to bring back silver if it wasn't even all that valuable to him? We're not told. And so there has to be a reason why, which we'll get to a little bit later. One other comment I wanted to make, which I'll put up here on the screen. I'll just read it here. From the first two verses there, this is what we can conclude. King Solomon's fleet of ships, they're called ships of Tarshish. They are parallel accounts here. It does not say Tarshish ships in the first reference, but it does in the second one. So King Solomon's fleet of ships were ships of Tarshish, yet they were stationed in Ezion Geber. Therefore, ships of Tarshish cannot refer to ships that were associated with a specific location, but must be a more generic reference to a type of ship, which would be presumably some kind of large ocean-going vessel. Right? If these ships here were called ships of Ezion Geber, then we would know that they were called that because that's where they were stationed. But they're called something else, which is ships of Tarshish, yet they were not located in Tarshish. So if that's our working hypothesis, let's just see how this makes sense or not. We're going to proceed and wonder if this expression ships of Tarshish is in fact what the concordance says. It's a generic reference to large ocean-going vessels. This is a Dutch map, just one example, from 1764, showing Ophir. It's showing it here in the south of Africa. And even today, what country in Africa do you find gold? You find it in South Africa. The word Africa is actually very much related to the word Ophir, which is why a lot of Bible scholars will tell you that you can find Ophir in Africa. Yes, we've already mentioned this issue here, but if Solomon sourced gold from Africa, from Ophir, Jehoshaphat did, Solomon probably did as well, if he can get ivory apes and peacocks from Africa or India, where would he get silver? We're not told. Africa is not really known for its silver. Next reference we're going to go through here. We will summarize this toward the end. We're going to go through all the references to the ships of Tarshish and see whether or not it makes sense that this is a generic expression for large ships. Psalm 48, speaking about Mount Zion, within her citadels, God has made himself known as a fortress. For behold, the kings assembled, they came on together. As soon as they saw it, they were astounded, they were in panic, they took to flight. Trembling took hold of them there, anguish is of a woman in labor. And then this verse 7, you destroy them like ships of Tarshish shattered by an east wind. What does that passage tell us about ships of Tarshish? It says that the kings who came to Mount Zion and fled are like ships of Tarshish broken by an east wind. So there's a parallel here. And that's all we can really conclude from this, given this context. Isaiah 2 has a reference to the ships of Tarshish in verse 16. Let's just read the context first. It says, "The haughty looks of man shall be brought low, and the lofty pride of men shall be humbled, and the Lord alone will be exalted in that day." The context here is about pride and being humbled. Verse 12, "For the Lord of hosts has a day against all that is proud and lofty, against all that is lifted up, and it shall be brought low." And here are some objects. The bottom of the list is the ships of Tarshish. Beginning in verse 13, "Against all the cedars of Lebanon, lofty and lifted up, against all the oaks of Bashan, against all the lofty mountains, and against all the uplifted hills, against every high tower, against every fortified wall, against all the ships of Tarshish, against all the beautiful craft." What does that passage then tell us about the ships of Tarshish? They're mentioned along with large, tall objects, which presumably represent pride, because that's what the context is. Yes, they were large and tall, easily seen, just like you can see a large, tall cedar tree or a high tower. Next reference is Isaiah 23, 1 and 14. "The burden concerning Tyre." Again, Tyre is that city on the eastern end of the Mediterranean Sea. "Wail, O ships of Tarshish, for Tyre is laid waste." Why would it say in this verse that the ships of Tarshish would wail because Tyre is wasted? Because this is the port where these ships would presumably sail to. If the city of Tyre was destroyed along with the port, where are the ships going to dock and unload their cargoes? It's going to be a problem then. From the land of Cyprus, it is revealed to them, well, O ships of Tarshish, for your stronghold is laid waste. What we can conclude from this is something quite simple, is that ships of Tarshish sailed to Tyre. And if it means large ships, then you would expect large ships to be going to the major seaport on the Mediterranean Sea. This next reference is a little more obscure. I'm going to make a suggestion as to what it could mean. From the ESV, Isaiah 60, verse 9, it says, for the coastland shall hope for me, the ships of Tarshish first. What do the ships of Tarshish do? They bring your children, which would be God's children, this would be the Jewish people, from afar. Their silver and their gold with them. So the Jews are coming from afar, they're going to Israel, they're bringing their wealth with them. Did that ever happen in history? Well, it did, and it happened a number of times before the nation of Israel was actually established. They had five different waves, or they're called aliyahs, which means ascent in Hebrew, five waves of when Israeli settlers came to Palestine before Israel became a nation. How did they arrive? There was no road network in Palestine at this time. There was no airport. The Ben-Gurion airport wasn't built until 1936. It started off as a military base. So commercial people or commercial planes were not flying into Israel until the 1950s. Therefore, if you wanted to be a settler in Israel and arrive, you would have to take ships. That was the only way to really come. And a lot of the people that came from different countries in the world, they would arrive on ship, and the countries they came from were Russia and Poland primarily. So they were European type of countries. Now, if we read further in Isaiah 60, a lot of these references haven't been fulfilled yet. Just to give you a couple of examples, in Isaiah 60 and verse 14, for example, at the bottom, it says, the city of the Lord, the Zion of the Holy One of Israel. That's what the Gentiles will refer to the city of God as. That hasn't happened yet. So there are some things in this chapter toward the end that are certainly unfulfilled. If we look and say verse 18, it says, violence shall no more be heard in thy land, speaking about Israel. Well, violence is still in the land of Israel today. There are some verses in this chapter that do not appear to have been fulfilled, but perhaps Isaiah 60 verse 9 has. One other word to notice here is the word first. That is a term that would indicate a sequence. What has to happen before other things happen? You have to have the Jews back in their land in order for the fortunes of Israel to be restored. So perhaps the ships of Tarshish were a reference to all the boats that carried the early settlers from Europe and other parts back into Israel. If that's a cogent explanation, then the ships of Tarshish there wouldn't refer to the same kind of ships that Solomon had, but it would still refer to ocean-going vessels. And the pictures I was able to find, those are boats that are large and they can carry lots of cargo, similar to the ships that you would find in Solomon's day. So I just present that as a possibility. Even if you think it's still going to be fulfilled in the future, that is also a possibility. So what we can conclude from this, I think, is that ships of Tarshish brought, or will bring, depending on your point of view, displaced Jews to Israel. So those are the references to the ships of Tarshish. There's not a whole lot to go on there. We will conclude about this. At the same time, we conclude about the references to Tarshish as a place. Now we're going to talk about these references where Tarshish is identified as a location. Remember, it can be a location, it can be a person, or it can be a reference to ships of Tarshish. We're now going to look at all the references that refer to Tarshish as a place, and it should be clear from the context that it was a place. This reference here, in 2 Chronicles 20, it refers to the ships of Tarshish. It doesn't say ships of Tarshish, but it's a parallel account to one that we looked at before. The ships that were built in Ezion-Geber by both Solomon and Jehoshaphat are called the ships of Tarshish. If you look further down in the verse, it says that the ships here, they were wrecked and were not able to go to Tarshish. So you have Tarshish ships that were going to Tarshish. Yeah. Now, we can't really tell from that verse where they were going, but the ships were built in Ezion-Geber, which again is over here at the tip of the Red Sea. It was possible then to sail from Ezion-Geber to Tarshish. We can't say more than that because we don't know where Tarshish is yet. Psalm 72 is a future prophecy about Christ. It says, may the kings of Tarshish and of the coastlands render him, that's Christ, tribute. May the kings of Sheba and Seba bring gifts. What can we conclude then? about Tarshish as a place. The first reference, we can conclude that ships could sail from Ezion Geber to Tarshish. And the second reference, Tarshish is associated with coastlands. It says the kings of Tarshish and of the coastlands. Those two things seem to be perhaps related in some way. That's really all we can conclude about where Tarshish is, not very much at all. Isaiah 23. Let's read this in verse 5. When the report comes to Egypt, they will be in anguish over the report about Tyre. Now we're going to read verse 6 and verse 12. It says, cross over to Tarshish. This is from the perspective of Tyre at the edge of the Mediterranean Sea. If you were in Tyre, you're told here to cross over to Tarshish, whale inhabitants of the coast. If you're in Tyre, you're also told to arise, cross over to Cyprus. Well, how do you cross over to Cyprus from Tyre? You have to go across the Mediterranean Sea. Therefore, how would you have to arrive at Tarshish? You would have to cross over the Mediterranean Sea. So Tarshish appears to be some location on the Mediterranean Sea. In verse 10, I'm not going to say much more about it than just to read it. We're going to talk about it more later. It says, cross over your land like the Nile, O daughter of Tarshish. Therefore, the land, this is the Tarshish land, it's likened to the Nile River. Why would that be the case? Well, if we can identify Tarshish, hopefully we can make a comparison to the Nile River and see if our location matches up somehow and looks something like the Nile Delta. Another reference to Tarshish as a place is Isaiah 66. This is a future reference here. It says, for I know their works and their thoughts, and the time is coming to gather all nations and tongues, and they shall come and see my glory. I will set a sign among them, and from them I will send survivors to the nations, to Tarshish, Pul, and Lud, who draw the bow, to Tubal, and Javan, to the coastlands far away, that have not seen my fame or seen my glory, and they shall declare my glory among the nations. This passage does not tell us where Tarshish is. There are other nations mentioned. Some people think Pul is Ethiopia, Lud is Egypt. The expression draw the bow might actually be a reference to Meshach. There's other references there too. And the context here is that Tarshish, wherever it is, we're not told, it will receive Gentile survivors when God pours out his wrath on his enemies. But we can't conclude more than that just from this reference here. This is an important reference to notice. Remember, I asked you to think about why Solomon would send ships to bring back silver. There is a reason we're going to be talking about this later. Jeremiah 10, verse 9. There is a reference here to beaten silver is brought from Tarshish and gold from Uphaz. Uphaz is a very similar word to Ophir. There's just one letter different in Hebrew, so it's probably talking about the same region, which would be Africa. But we don't know where Tarshish is. The point to take away, Tarshish is noted for its silver. Of all the metals, its silver is mentioned here. Ezekiel 27, verse 12. We will have more to say about this verse later as well. It says, Tarshish did business with you, Tyre, because of your great wealth of every kind. There are four types of ores, O-R-E-S, that are mentioned here. Silver, iron, tin, and lead. They exchanged for your wares. What can we conclude there? Wherever it was, it traded ores with Tyre. Yeah? And just notice in passing the date that this chapter was written, probably about 600 BC, that will be relevant later on. I'm asking you to process a lot of information, I know that, but to build a case for Tarshish, we have to do that. This reference is maybe a little more familiar. This is from the ESV. It says, Sheba and Dedan and the merchants of Tarshish and all its leaders. That translation is leaders. In the King James Version, it's young lions. I'm going to suggest a different translation toward the end, but just keep that thought in mind now. So we have Sheba, Dedan, the merchants of Tarshish, and young lions are going to say to the Gogian host, have you come to seize spoil? Have you assembled your host to carry off plunder, to carry away silver and gold, to take away livestock and goods, to seize great spoil? What can we conclude about the location of Tarshish? Not a whole lot. All we're told here is that merchants of Tarshish asked the Gogian host a question along with some other individuals or nations. Jonah. Remember where Jonah was told to go? He was told to go to Nineveh. Where did he end up going? He found a ship going to Tarshish. We won't read the entire thing for sake of time. In Jonah's day, ships sailed from Joppa to Tarshish. This was about 750 BC. Last reference we're going to look at is to one, just one Tarshish as a person. There are four references to Tarshish as a person. We're just going to look at the one in Genesis chapter 10. Javan was the son of Japheth, therefore grandson of Noah. He had four sons, Elisha, Tarshish, Kittim, and Dodanim. And in verse 5 of Genesis 10, it says, from these, four people here, the four sons of Jabin, the coastland people spread in their lands, each with their own language by their chain or by their clans and their nations. If you look at the map over here, here is Tarshish. It's the same as Tarsus. You may know that Saul came from Tarsus. It's likely then that this Tarshish individual here in Genesis 10 settled a little bit north of Cyprus there. The other men, names that are mentioned here, Dodanim, Elisha, and Jabin, also settle along the coastal region there. Notice one other thing, though. It says, from these, the coastland people spread in their lands, which suggests that these four individuals here didn't just stay there permanently, but they would have migrated in another direction. Also, something to keep in mind. There's a lot to keep in mind here, but it will all come together at the end. Okay. Let's do a little summary then so far. We're almost done our first bullet point. If we had to summarize what we know about Tarshish in the Bible, what could we say? Let's read the ships of Tarshish first. King Solomon's navy was stationed in Ezion Geber at the tip of the Red Sea. His navy, which is called ships of Tarshish, returned once every 3 years with gold, silver, ivory, apes, and peacocks. Ships of Tarshish appear to be large ocean-going vessels. They had to be large if they're going to be gone for 3 years. You have to carry supplies, etc., as well as a lot of cargo. And they needed specialized sailors, etc. Ships of Tarshish went to Ophir for gold. Kings who came against Mount Zion and fled are like ships of Tarshish destroyed by an east wind. Ships of Tarshish are large, tall objects along with cedars, oaks, mountains, hills, towers, and fortified walls. Ships of Tarshish sailed to Tyre, and ships of Tarshish transported or will transport Jews to Israel. That's what we know about ships of Tarshish. How about Tarshish as a place? Ships sailing from Ezion Geber could reach Tarshish. That was the fleet of Jehoshaphat. Tarshish is associated with coastlands. In Psalm 72, kings of Tarshish will bring tribute to Christ. That's yet future. Tarshish was across the sea from Tyre. Tarshish will receive Gentile survivors when Israel's enemies are destroyed. That's yet future. Tarshish was known for its silver. Tarshish traded ores with Tyre. When the Gogian host invades Israel, the merchants of Tarshish ask this Russian host why it has invaded Israel. And Jonah sailed from Joppa to Tarshish. That's all we know about Tarshish as a place. And finally, Tarshish as a person. Jabin's son, who was named Tarshish, probably migrated to Tarsus, or Tarshish, just north of Cyprus on the coast there. Next, we're going to look at some secondary sources to try and identify where this Tarshish was. We're going to use some historians and geographers. I have about 11 or 12 references here, and there are a lot more that we could have used. You'll have to just trust me on these. Let's look at a map again, and we're going to reproduce some of the items in the column here about Tarshish as a place, the ones that are not future. Can we determine from the references here that are not future where Tarshish might have been? Let's just read them again. Ships sailing from Ezion Geber, which isn't on the map, it's at the tip of the Red Sea. They had to be able to reach Tarshish. Tarshish is associated with coastlands. It was across the Mediterranean Sea from Tyre. It was known for its silver. Tarshish traded ores with Tyre. And Jonah sailed from Joppa to Tarshish. Is there a place in the Mediterranean Sea basin that would meet that criteria? There actually is. And it's called Tartessos, which is over here in the southern part of Spain. So for the next little while, I'm going to present some evidence that would suggest that Tarshish, as it refers to these places here, is actually in the southwestern part of Spain. You can see if you agree or disagree. Just one other map while I'm thinking about it here. If these ships were going to sail from Ezion Geber over here, and they were going to go all the way over to southern Spain, look how long a voyage that would have been. If these ships, in fact, were going to take a three-year voyage to get from Ezion Geber all the way down there and around, load up with some kind of cargo here. And what kind of cargo haven't we talked about yet? Where did Solomon get gold? Probably in Ophir in Africa. Apes, peacocks, and ivory, you can get it in Africa. What about silver? What if he got the silver from Tarshish, which would have been over here? Let's see if we can find any evidence that this area in southwestern Spain was known for its silver production. I'll give you a hint, we can find some, right? Therefore, it's likely that a three-year trip around here to load up with all these cargoes, if you're going to, say, load up with ivory, you probably have to hunt the elephants, skin them, etc. Even if you went to India as well to get some peacocks or other elephants, you know, you can see why this whole trip might take 3 years. It would be a very long time to be away. These references here, I'm now going to quote from some historians and some geographers. Some of these sources are quite old, but they are still valid. This is from 1837. This author says, Phoenicia started into commercial prominence soon after the founding of Sidon, about 2,200 years before the Christian era. The reason we're talking about Phoenicia is because that was a people that did a lot of commercial and maritime trading. For many centuries, as a great central commercial power, this is Phoenicia, they stood nearly alone for ages in the conducting of commerce by far sea voyages. They pushed boldly to distant shores, established colonies or commercial relations in distant lands, built ships of sufficient size and strength to buffet storms and carry heavy cargoes, and sent these ships so regularly to the coast of Europe or of Tarshish as both to occasion them to be called the ships of Tarshish, and to make that phrase a comprehensive designation for all ships which plied on long voyages. His comment here is that you can call a ship that was Phoenician, that was large, a ship of Tarshish, to convey the fact that it was the type of a vessel that you would send to faraway places. It didn't have to go to or from Tarshish necessarily, although it could have. This is from a book called The Handbook of Bible Geography, 1872. Tarshish, concerning the exact position of the city or country, opinions have been much divided, so this is not a slam dunk here. It's a possibility. But it is highly probable that it was located in the south of Spain. Tarshish was an old, celebrated, opulent, cultivated commercial city which carried on trade in the Mediterranean and with the seaports of Syria, especially Tyre and Joppa, and that it most probably lay on the extreme west of that sea. Was there then, in ancient times, any city in these parts which corresponded with these clearly ascertained facts? There was. Such was Tartessus in Spain, said to have been a Phoenician colony, a fact which would account for its intimate connection with Palestine and the biblical narrative. The name, which is of Phoenician origin, seems to denote the district of southwestern Spain, comprising the several colonies which Tyre planted in that country. We are not, however, convinced that the opposite coast of Africa was not included, so that the word would denote to an inhabitant of Palestine the extreme western parts of the world. That's a little bit of a mouthful there. The last few sentences there, what this author is trying to explain is, you could also use the word Tarshish to refer to the coastal area in northwestern Africa. Notice there's a town here called Carthage. We're going to see a reference to that toward the very end of the talk, so you know we're almost done when you see Carthage. This theory, the idea that Tarshish could refer to Spain, gains force by the testimony of ancient writers to the great wealth of Spain. One of these ancient writers was the historian Pliny. Nearly all Spain abounds in the metals, lead, iron, copper, silver, gold. Another historian called Herrin, he lived about the 1750s or so, he says Spain was once the richest land in the world for silver. Notice that. If these Tarshish ships went to Tarshish in Spain, why would they be going there? Probably to, and among other things, to get silver. You can get gold, ivory, apes, and peacocks from other areas, but you couldn't get silver in Africa. You had to go to Spain. The term ships of Tarshish had come, at the time the chronicles were compiled, to signify large Phoenician ships of a particular size and description, destined for long voyages, just as in English, East Indiaman was a general name given to vessels, some of which were not intended to go to India at all. So if you saw a ship called an East Indiaman, you wouldn't necessarily assume it was going to India. It was just a name given to a large ship. Same sort of thing with the ships of Tarshish. They could go to Tarshish, but they didn't have to. This is a picture of an East Indiaman, just in case you're wondering what it may have looked like. That was quick. Next, this is by a happy geographer called T.T. Smiley. And his comment is, Tarshish, the son of Javan, was probably settled on the eastern part of the southern coast of Asia Minor, which would be here, this Tarsus here. Josephus says that Tarsus, the chief city of Cilicia, was founded by Tarshish, that was the son of Javan, and that the province of Cilicia itself was anciently called Tarshish. Tartessus, or Tartessos, an ancient city in Spain, was probably built by a colony from Tarshish. For, as they were evidently a seafaring and commercial people, they might easily extend their voyages in the Mediterranean as far as the coast of Spain. Remember Genesis 10, verse 5? What did it say? That these descendants of Javan could migrate? That may have been exactly what happened here. They may have migrated from the original Tarsus site here, further westward along the coast. We're almost done the massive-looking slides. This one, also from our happy friend, Mr. Smiley, says, Tarshish was a seaport from which the best specimens of shipbuilding were produced, so that ships built after the same manner were called ships of Tarshish, although not actually built there. In fact, some of them were built in Ezion Geber. Silver was a produce of Tarshish, and it also appears from Ezekiel that iron, lead, and tin were brought from that place. It was also distant and westward, since Jonah intended to flee there. But neither silver nor tin were supplied by Tarsus in Cilicia. That's why the Tarsus here could not be the reference where Solomon was sending his ships to, because it didn't have the silver or the tin. Right? If it did, then Solomon wouldn't have built ships in Ezion Geber, because they have to go all the way around Africa. He would have just built ships down here in Israel and be about a 1 or 2 day sail up to Tarsus. Let's see, are we done this here? I think we can just move on here. Okay, next slide. Tarsus, or southern Spain, so called from Tartessos or Tarsus, at the mouth of a river in Spain called the Guadalquivir, sent either from Spain or the Scilly Islands, which are up here. They sent silver, iron, tin, and lead to a market at Tyre. This is from a Bible atlas in 1847. Look how many people have come to the same conclusion here. Tarsus was sometimes used like the modern expression East and West Indies, and definitely for places far beyond sea, and ships came to be called Tarsus ships, or ships of Tarsus, which were intended for long voyages, as in modern times a ship of the largest class of merchant vessels is called an East Indiaman. More distinctly, as a country, that part of Spain called Baetica and Andalusia in modern times, this country was rich in silver, so that the first Phoenician ships loaded up with it, and even, it is said, made their anchors of it. So these ships would make anchors of silver. The next slide will elaborate on that a little bit more. And as silver in Arabia was many times more precious than gold, notice this comment here. We're trying to figure out, why would Solomon send these ships of Tarsus to bring back silver? Yes. Well, if silver was valued in Arabia, which was a trading partner of Israel to the south, why wouldn't he bring back silver? Then he could use that and exchange that for spices and other goods that the Israelites would desire. So, picking up here, as silver in Arabia was many times more precious than gold, we can see how profitable it must have been to the Tyrians to have Arabia open to them by Solomon's possession of Ezion Geber and the Red Sea navigation. This is a fairly new book. If you're bored sometime and want to read about it, you can read this book. It came out in 2016, Tartessos and the Phoenicians in Iberia. It's a exciting read from beginning to end, right? And one quote here, it says, it is said that the first Phoenicians who sailed to Tartessos took on so much silver that when they had loaded up the olive oil and other merchandise of lesser value, they had no more room to take on the silver. So before their departure from those places, they had no choice but to make the silver into the objects that they use, including their anchors. So that would explain perhaps why you might make an anchor out of silver. You were desperate for cargo room. I'm not going to read the entire thing here. I just wanted to make a comment here. This article here, written in 1928, shows that you can find in these two parts of Spain, you can find lead. The first sentence there that says these two regions of Spain were an important source of lead during the days of the Roman Republic, therefore during the days of Ezekiel. And in fact, you can find lead today in a place called the Sierra Morena. Remember, what were the four metals that were mentioned in Ezekiel 27? Silver, iron, tin, and lead. This is a proof that you can find lead in Spain. The Phoenicians, like the agents of the Judean rulers, visited the shores of Spain for the gold, silver, copper, and tin that were found there. According to this Roman historian, it was this abundance of gold and silver that furnished Carthage with the sinews of war against Rome at a later period. Perhaps these ships of Tarsus went by Solomon's command to also get gold. As for mining, the mines of these two areas in Spain abounded in silver and lead. Well, that's what you would expect if Spain was, in fact, Tarsus and trading with Tyre. All the four ores that you mentioned, or that were mentioned in Ezekiel 27, verse 12, silver, iron, tin, and lead, you find them all in Spain. Some idea of the extent of the mining industry in Spain may be gathered from the fact that in the 2nd century BC, there were no less than 40,000 miners in this one city in Spain alone. Now, that's several hundred years after the time Ezekiel wrote, but if there's 40,000 miners in Spain, that tells you how much ore had to come out of the ground. Just a couple more quotes here, then we'll summarize part two. Then it's downhill from there. Okay, the Bible records that the Tarsus fleets of Solomon and Hiram return home every 3 years. Indeed, the chronicler believed that Tarsus could be reached from Ezion Geber, if this is correct. Then here we have the first reference to a circumnavigation of Africa in the reign of King Solomon, since Tarsus is certainly to be located in southern Spain. This is an article from 1984 in the Biblical Archaeologist. And a book from 1969, 10 Resources of the World. Does that sound like a book anyone would want to read? Well, I just skimmed it to find a reference to 10 being in Spain, and sure enough, you can find it there. It says for a distance of, a single, complex, but continuous 10 district extends southeastward through Portugal and Spain for a distance of 500 miles. I won't mention all the names of those rocks. The 10 resources of the Iberian Peninsula, which is where Spain is, are large. Does it make sense then that you could find 10 in Spain? Yes. Let's summarize this then. Where was Tarsus the place? You can make a case that Tarsus was a region along the south coast of Spain. It was noted especially for its silver. I'll mention that again. But it could also possibly refer to the western Mediterranean coastlands. It doesn't have to be just in the southwestern part of Spain. There was a Tarsus in Cilicia, which would be this city here, which was settled by Javan, Noah's grandson. But it would not have been the Tarsus spoken of in Jeremiah and Ezekiel, because it didn't have the oars there. Nor would it have been the destination of Tarsus ships, because you couldn't get silver or tin there. Southern Spain, however, had vast silver resources as well as other ores. It's also across the sea from Tyre. In fact, if you were sailing from Tyre, and the expression in the Bible is across the sea, or something similar, the furthest that you could get away from Tyre on the east there would be here on the west. Now remember, we read Isaiah 23, verse 10, and it says in the Bible, cross over your land like the Nile, O daughter of Tarsus. So Tarsus, the place, is described like the Nile River. Why would that be the case? If you look at this map over here, this is southwestern Spain over here. Notice there's a low-lying coastal area, very much like you have in the Nile Delta there. It's the region of Tartessos here. Is there anything that is similar between the Nile Delta and Tartessos? Yes, they both have a major river going through them, and it's low-lying coastal areas. So perhaps this reference to Isaiah 23:10 makes a little more sense then. You can actually find a place in Spain that is somewhat like the Nile Delta. Okay, part three, we're getting toward the home stretch here. I'd like to go through some reasons now why people have suggested that Tarsus is Britain. We're going to look at these and see whether or not they are compelling. And I'll let you conclude on your own. I'll bias you in advance and tell you I disagree. Is Tarsus Britain? Well, if we look at the traditional explanation of the merchants of Tarsus and young lions from Elpis, Israel, the author here says that, and we'll pick up here, he's talking about Tyre. The prophet says, Tarsus was thy merchant by reason of the multitude of all kinds of riches.